Welcome to CUTV News Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters talk to today's top thinkers from all around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas that you can put to use in your personal or professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, we dig deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. CUTV News Radio, it's the show where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Nice to have you with us here on CUTV News Radio. Today, we are going to be talking about health care. It's a very important subject. As you know, it's all part of the election campaign that's going on right now. So it's really nice to be able to do something that's current and important. As you may know, the digital age is finally upon us, and it's bringing clinical and business transformation to health care. You may not have known that, but it is happening. So the big question is, how do stakeholders leverage such innovation and potentially disruptive technology in order to improve patient experience and outcomes and ease provider burden and lower costs? Let me give you a little information. Our guest today is Michael Joseph. He's the founder of a company called Prime Dimensions. It's a healthcare services and solutions firm that specializes in digital health strategy, innovation, and technology solutions. Now, I know that's a mouthful, but anyway, that's what they do. Prime Dimensions works with healthcare organizations to help redesign, streamline, and extend their care delivery in order to achieve the goals of digital health transformation, in order to improve patient interactions and care coordination, increase provider productivity and efficiency, and influencing the behavior change for disease management, wellness prevention, and healthy lifestyles. Their cloud-based platform provides core and enabling technologies to implement and enhance healthcare applications and digital health solutions that confront the most urgent, complex challenges and also improve clinical, financial, and operational aspects of care delivery. Now, I know that's a lot. It's hard to comprehend all of that, just like that. But anyway, that's really what they're into. Healthcare ought to be regarded as a human right, says our guest, but it's quite obvious that the current business of healthcare delivery in most instances does not support that notion. According to Michael Joseph, again, he's our guest today, coming up in just a moment, the transition from fee-for-service toward value-based payments is really the right direction, but it's causing a seismic shift as industry stakeholders try and figure out how to deliver higher quality care at lower costs. He says there is an imperative among providers, payers, commercial and public, and employers to focus on wellness and disease prevention. That really basically is what we're going to be talking about today. I think you're going to find it very interesting. And you're going to learn. I'm going to learn because I don't know about all this myself. So that's why we have experts on. And Michael Joseph is an expert in this. It's his company, Prime Dimensions. It's headquartered in Centerville, Virginia. It's in Fairfax County in the Washington, D.C. suburbs. And without further ado, let's bring Michael on. Again, Michael is on the line with us now from the Virginia suburbs of Washington. So, Michael, welcome. Nice to have you with us. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Doug. Thank you for having me join today, and thank you for that fantastic introduction. I really appreciate it.
Well, I must admit, some people listening to this might not have been able to grasp all of what's going on, what you do. It's a lot to kind of comprehend in just, 30 seconds or a minute, my reading that. So let me ask you, explain to me, what is Prime Dimensions? Tell me the story of it. How long has it been around? How did it start?
Started back in 2009, and focused on a lot of operational aspects of data in the federal space, in VA and Medicare and Medicaid, and how they're leveraging data for different types of claims processing. It's pretty much around claims data, less so on the patient engagement and patient experience that you see today at the time leading up to 2009. But I got very interested in the data of healthcare and how it could be utilized. And if you look at the time of Facebook and other industries leveraging data in ways to better engage customers, that was the beginning of what we see as digital health transformation today. So tried to position Prime Dimensions in that space of digital health transformation, leveraging the tools and technologies of other industries in healthcare. So you're able to book your travel self-service for a number of years, including today. You can do it pretty easily. You can find a ride on Uber pretty easily. But such transformation in healthcare has been lagging, And that's the complexity of healthcare, and we'll get into some of the reasons why, as well as the policies and regulations around healthcare. So that is.
Let me ask you a question. All of this information, who's this important to know? I mean, who are you really focusing on? Are you focusing to the healthcare providers themselves? How about the average person, who might be listening, who, he has some health insurance, et cetera, et cetera? Is it important for him to know about all of this or not?
It absolutely is. More and more of the industry participants are trying to get the patient's attention and really get that patient's share, if you will, of the market, right? So in terms of having value-based care, it's about wellness and disease prevention and healthy lifestyles, as you mentioned in your introduction. So the healthcare, your primary care provider wants to be part of that, especially if they're part of what they call an accountable care organization. That's looking at not only moving away from fee-for-service. So we can dive into that in a minute, but the patient is really being pulled in many directions for attention, right, and for keep them healthy. The employer wants them healthy, for better productivity and less cost associated with episodes of care. The model there is moving towards more wide adoption of employee-based health plans where the employer takes on more of the risk. They pay all the claims. So not only do sick employees put a dent in productivity, they also add more claims expense. So employers are definitely looking at how to stem the costs of healthcare and keep their employees healthy in that model of self-insurance. Why do they want to be self-insured? Well, a one-size-fits-all plan for employers from, say, a national carrier like an Aetna or a Cigna may not be appropriate for that employer. They might look at their population as younger, they know their population better, so they can tailor plans in a way that makes sense, and they'll just use an Aetna or a Cigna as a third-party administrator just to do the implementation of the plan, but not really have full risk, so the employer takes on the risk. So there's the employer perspective. I mentioned the provider perspective on the ACOs, and I'll get to that in a minute. The payers want to be part of that. You know, as a personal example, when I start a medication management for a certain condition, my insurance company calls me quite often. How am I doing with that medication? Is it working for me? They know that, they want to be involved, right? So I don't think it's a bad thing, but you're getting it from all sides right now. Employers, your traditional providers, and your payers are looking at you as a person, as an individual, as a consumer of healthcare.
Okay, I got that. For those listening to us who might, this may be a little bit over their head, the provider would be the hospital, the physician, et cetera, and the payer would be the insurance company. Am I right? Or does it get more specific?
Yeah, that's right. And, let's talk about value-based care, because here's where payers and providers are coming together to share data and information about patients to keep them healthy in their daily lives. Make sure they have their annual physicals, make sure they, wellness, and that goes to employers as well. Employers are offering wellness plans and discounts at memberships for health clubs and things like that. So they're trying to keep their employees and people healthy in their lives. Most people do that, and by and large, but some people don't, and we have fast food, and we have a lot of reasons why healthcare in America is a decision that we have to be careful what we consume in our bodies, right? So we have to think about exercise and how we live our lives. So that education is critical. And your zip code is really a big determinant of your health outcomes. That's a sad statement, but true, that, where there's less jobs and per capita income is lower, access to care suffers. So that's a real segment of the population that Medicaid and other providers are trying to, or other entities coming together trying to figure that out in a community-based way. And there's so that's a big part of the population that falls through the cracks in getting the access to care they need. So that's a big part of what, I guess, part of the Medicaid expansion in states, and also related to getting people individual insurance in the Affordable Care Act exchanges, which is under various states of chaos, if you will, right? Let's just leave that at the Affordable Care Act.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. Interesting.
And the chaos is rooted in the design from its inception and how to price risk to the political infighting. So we'll leave that as it is. But But, you know, we're at this point, Doug, and for listeners, it really dates back to 1942 and this notion of an act from Congress that saw wages escalating, wage inflation through World War II, because a lot of would-be employees were fighting the war. So there was less supply of employees. So wages started to increase because, you know, supply and demand. So employers were, how do we attract the best employees here? Because a lot of our workforce is fighting the war. And they decided to add health insurance as a benefit. You know, you get free health insurance. And that was free at the time. Really, it was low cost. Health insurance wasn't a big expense back in the 1940s. So that was the root of employee-sponsored health insurance. Well, what happened was, that became the dominant way to get health insurance from that point in time, and it sort of was good until the 1960s. You had big corporations offering nice benefit plans for families and their dependents, and everything was good. But then employees started to move around more in the 70s, 80s. Small businesses started to form. The model started to break down, and the small employer in the individual market, they had a hard time getting insurance, so HMOs formed to help stabilize this, but that was kind of a mess too because a lot of them were for-profit. And so we were left in the 90s with a really chaotic system of large employers and employer-sponsored plans getting relatively good premiums and rates and really good tax benefits, but the individual market and the small business market was suffering. So that sort of continues today. So a little bit of a historical perspective on that. And if there any further clarification, we can go into that. But suffice it to say, here we are today, and we're looking at not only moving from this kind of chaotic system, but bringing value and patient experience to the equation. So all of that history, underlying all of that, was a fee-for-service sort of payment model with varying degrees. Okay, so fee-for-service. Now we're moving into the value-based care, where quality and patient experience become part of the way by which providers get paid, but that's more risk to a provider. So how do they absorb that risk? And that's where we are today. We have to find ways for the providers to take on that risk, use data and analytics, and shared vision for patient-centered care to get the, so it's really a seismic shift, it's a culture change, and it's really where technology comes in to sort of help this journey.
Well, as I understand it, and straighten me out if I'm wrong, what you do is you're providing enhanced digital technology for healthcare providers and others to really streamline the work that they do. I mean, from data governance, data strategy, data quality, all of that kind of stuff that we're talking about that goes into computers, to streamline that information, I guess, to make what they provide more effective and cheaper to provide. Is that somewhere in the right direction?
That's absolutely true. Yes, the data is critical, and part of the electronic health record journey started in the late 80s, early 90s, really around billing systems. And so, the electronic medical record was primarily built as a billing system. And today's electronic medical record is really an enterprise application that does quite a bit more. And that could be a decision that, you know, most large providers and integrated delivery networks have taken on, a large EMR. You hear about the multi-million or billion-dollar, you know, implementations of these systems, and their workflow engines or databases. They have all complexity application platforms all built into this platform, which could be good. But then you might be at the innovation cycle of your vendor and not where you as a provider want to innovate. So there's a trade-off there, right? So it's a question of how do you want to go forward? And, you know, I'm going to probably see some pushback on this maybe later, but if you go with a vendor solution that ties everything together, you might be innovating on their cycle and not your own. I'll just leave it at that, right? But you have to have data liquidity, which means the data's got to move from where this data is collected into other applications like population health, care management, patient engagement tools out to telehealth and virtual care, and that's all got to be seamlessly integrated, because the notion of inpatient stay as we know it is changing. A good friend of mine is at UPMC, Dr. Jesus Dresta. They announced last year that they're building 3 state-of-the-art digital hospitals, but the caveat there and the takeaway is no new net beds. So imagine that, Doug. 3 new state-of-the-art hospitals, digital, probably immunotherapy, different. They have different purpose-built hospitals for each one of those. But across the network, no new net beds. That tells you that patient care is moving to the home more and more, and that digital transformation has taken place with digital therapeutics in the home, virtual care in the home, and things like that. So this is happening at the same time we're trying to reduce length of stays in the hospital because of value-based pay. So it's kind of like a good outcome that both things are happening at the same time. We have the technology, and we have this readiness and acceptance of value-based care, and I think it's come together in a good way.
Let me simplify this a little bit, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I gather you're kind of like providing the technology, like Microsoft or Apple would on their software to users. You're providing this, it's more than software, I presume, to hospitals, to doctors, to insurance companies. Is that what you provide? Who are your customers? Who do you sell to?
So predominantly, Doug, we are we've been an advisory services and digital health strategy firm. Just of late, we moved into an interoperability engine called Visilier that takes this data from various systems, say from a workplace health clinic to a primary care entity. So we're moving in that direction now. But our legacy offering has been advisory services around digital strategy and solutions to help guide clients in the right direction towards digital health strategy. So, for example, at Geisinger Health, we worked on real-time analytics and some aspects to care delivery redesign for using technology in a way that both the clinical enterprise can utilize that data as well as the payer side. And again, that gets into that value-based care where the provider and the payers are sharing information. It's much easier done in an integrated delivery network like a Geisinger Health, like a UPMC, like a Kaiser, Intermountain Health Systems, because they have the payer and the provider together. So that model works nicely in those types of instances.
All right. In essence, you provide organizations in transforming data into actionable insights to improve their performance, make informed decisions, and achieve measurable results. That kind of it?
That's right. And we do that. What's happening here is digital health transformation is really accelerated by certain forces. I mentioned the value-based care, new business models for delivery, ensuring a better experience for patients both at the point of care and with the technology. You know, when you order Uber or you book a reservation, it's pretty easy to do on Expedia. Similarly, the transactional type of aspects to healthcare need to be as easy for patients. The patient portal needs to be easy, usable. So that's kind of the user-centered design that's what we focus on, and the data liquidity and the interoperability. So IT modernization is another aspect to what we do. And cloud computing, moving the data to the cloud, moving applications to the cloud, is becoming commonplace, especially when you have this notion of genomics and different ways to aggregate data around healthcare organizations and share that data. So the cloud model is quite compelling.
Wow, this really sounds pretty fascinating. You know, I want to mention one that you had a pretty interesting story. What got you involved in that? Did you start the company?
I did. I started it in 2009, wanting to get into the data of healthcare versus the IT systems. And then 4 months into that journey, I was actually diagnosed with leukemia, and with a wife 6 weeks pregnant, that was a strange turn of events, to say the least. So through that journey, there were some lessons learned about patient experience, and I'm here talking about it, so I guess the outcome was good. So we're all not complaining, but an episode of sepsis along the way was highly preventable. but nonetheless almost cost my life, right? So looking at how would I have been better engaged, better informed to prevent that. Now, is there a guarantee of that? No, but these are things to think about. And then thinking about my daughter as a three-year-old who had a very serious liver condition, moving from different hospitals, to exchanging information with her case, back and forth, different patient portals, it was kind of clumsy. It wasn't very easy to do. So again, moving the information for second opinions, for transitions of care, making that easier for patients, that whole notion of data liquidity. And that's what I focus on. And a lot of that's driven by my experience as a super user of the health system with my own health and with my daughter. And once you're a patient, you get a full view of what's going on in the health system and what's wrong with it. And I really take my hat off to these folks, these patient advocates that are out there, like just savvy cooperative. I'm going to throw out to Jen Aranjeff and bring a patient into the fold to be part of the solution, not just be a customer, if you will, and Wego Health. So there's so many patient advocates that are coming out there through social media and making this just a patient-centered journey as we get the patient's voice into the solution.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I thought that maybe it was because of your being diagnosed with leukemia and your experiences through that episode that you started the company after that. Actually, you started the company before that. So I guess an interesting question would be, with this technology you've perfected now, do you think your experience when you were diagnosed and what you went through and your wife and your child would have been easier and different had this technology existed then, 9 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many innovations going on right now. There's, I think the new statistic is $6 billion invested in digital health to date this year, $6 billion up from $5 billion last year, and the year's not even over yet. Apple has a personal health record through the iOS. A lot of great innovation going on. You know, XMed is coming up this weekend out in the Singularity University and Daniel Kraft. You're going to see a lot of innovations coming out of that. I just came from the Personal Connected Health Conference up in Boston. So I want to be positioned as part of an answer to the problem and complement what's going on in the marketplace already. As Prime Dimensions moves into this digital health productization phase, we want to help those who are already established better connect with patients in areas like rural care and where there's data silos. But there's a lot of innovation going on, and we just want to be part of the solution along with them. So it's a great time to be innovating in healthcare and be part of this discussion.
Tell me about the company itself. How big is your firm, your expertise? Talk to me a little bit, because you obviously know a lot about what you're talking about. Tell me a little bit about that.
We've had an accordion type of journey along the way. So, you know, we're at a lean size of 11 of us, developers, business analysts, clinical advisors. And so very lean, and we're looking to obviously grow move forward in a way that is sustainable. So, but we've had our successes at places like Geisinger Health and Blue Cross and Blue Shield, and we're looking to move forward in a way that's innovative and accelerate growth, right? We do have to accelerate growth, but we have to do it in a way that articulates a value proposition that is going to resonate in the marketplace, and that's for us to do. So this conversation helps with that, and I think we have a well-intended staff, a group of folks that are very committed to patient-centered care, really bending the cost curve, and that's important. So we're all passionate, we're invested, we're collaborative, and we're seeking those types of people to work with, to partner with, to move the needle in the right direction on the triple aim in healthcare, which is lower cost, greater quality, better patient experience, and easing provider burden. That last one's a big critical factor. How many clicks of the mouse does a doctor have to go through to get to the answer of a patient? Or how many different applications do they have to get through to see a patient and get to the right answer? Or if they're in a point of care at a patient, are they looking at a monitor, or are they looking at the patient eye to eye and having that contact? So that all of that is embedded into what we're focused on here.
You know, this is remarkable, really remarkable. And I'm just wondering if tell me who you pitch your product to? Who are the clients you sell your services to? An example.
We're looking at.
Would it be, you know, go ahead. You tell me.
Yeah, we're looking at workplace health clinics as one area where there's potential data silos. It's kind of a walk-in type environment. And, you know, so the employer who might be self-employed, self-insured rather, would want to have their employees participate maybe in a health risk assessment at the clinic, and we can help with that data from the primary care doctor in the community or the specialist or wherever this patient has consumed care. I just recently had a knee surgery, and the ambulatory surgery center was very paper-driven, and I had to provide my own health history in advance of that. So moving data in an electronic way from where it exists to where you need to go. And guess what? When I filled the paperwork, I realized that my dose on one of my medications was filled out wrong because it was coming from me. Well, if it came from a source system where the prescriber was, where it was prescribed, that information would not be wrong. It'd be correct. So the accuracy, the thoroughness, and completeness of the information is critical for that point of care, say, at an ambulatory surgery center. Other things we're trying to do is look at digital health solutions that are out there, like virtual care solutions, and try to enhance those in ways that bring in different data or bring in different applications connected to that solution with an API to have that data flow from one to the other in a more seamless way. So those are some of the markets that we're looking at.
Boy, I got to give it to you. This sounds so advanced and so understandable. Obviously, this would have an impact on the overall healthcare. It could knock it down, couldn't it, for these companies that utilize all this technology, make it much simpler for them?
Right. There's a lot of disintermediation going on because of this in the marketplace, right? You know, if you think in terms of disruptive forces, going back to, you know, Clay Christensen from Harvard talked about disruption, right? So we have a disruption going on in healthcare where the business models are changing, and technology has got to be part of that. But we come as – it really requires a multidisciplinary team of clinicians, researchers, technologists, data scientists, IT architectures, human-centered design experts, design think experts to really – really explode this, right? So this is what we're trying to do, and we have expertise in that as well, and we really want to guide, build, and deploy solutions that yield measurable, impactful results, and those results really have to be mapped back to something along lower cost, better patient quality experience, easing provider burden. A lot of that is hard to quantify. You know, what is it about easing provider burden that can be, you can assess a return on investment on that? These are models that are hard to do, so we have to think about that as well. But yeah. I think the notion of the benefits of digital health has been proven already. Improved patient interactions, provider efficiency, and the digital therapeutics that are out there really look encouraging behavior change for healthy lifestyles. And
Michael? I hate to interrupt you, but we are running out of time, Michael. This is such a great story. I want to make sure that I have the opportunity to give your website out for others to go to this website, because there's a lot of valuable information there where they can really comprehend it once they dig into it. The website for Prime Dimensions, Michael's company, is primedimensions.com, primedimensions.com. If you go there, you can begin to really understand and learn more about the magnificent material and data that this company is providing. Michael, we've run out of time. Thank you for telling us all about this. This is really great stuff, and I appreciate your time. Okay?
Thank you, Doug. It's been a pleasure.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you so much. Again, our guest has been Michael Joseph. He's the head of Prime Dimensions, headquartered in Centerville, Virginia, in the Washington, D.C. area. Thanks, Michael.
You've been listening to CUTV News Radio. If you want to learn more about our programming or perhaps be considered for a future show, visit us on the web at www.cutvnews.com. And if you enjoyed listening to today's show, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and be sure to write a review. Thanks for listening, and from all of us at CUTV News Radio, we hope you have a productive and inspired day.
That's it for today, everybody. I'm Doug Llewellyn. See you next time. Bye for now. Have a great day.